So today I'm in Stoke Gifford with Julie Bradley. So the first question, Julie, is where did we first meet?
Well, interesting one. We met at the beginning of your ordination training. So you started training at WEMTEC when I was at the beginning of my second year. And we shared 2 years in that context.
And that was 2001. Yes. Gosh.
Long time ago.
There was only one baby then.
That's right. You had the first ever WEMTEC baby, I think, didn't you?
I don't know whether... Is WEMTEC in the same way, running in the same way? Will it be the only ever WEMTEC baby?
It may be, yes. It does still run, but not in Bristol now.
Certainly ain't the only WEMTEC Bristol baby. And so do you drink tea?
Well, this is the sad thing, no. I don't. I really don't like regular tea. I can just about force a cup down if somebody makes me one and it's too embarrassing not to drink it. But I never choose it. So no, I don't like regular tea.
And normally when people say, I ask, have you got an example of a time when you really had to drink tea that you can share?
Oh, I think maybe I might not share that one because it might embarrass people who listen in. So yeah, there are occasions. Yeah. But
so Elizabeth Harper described drinking tea in Africa because she never drinks tea either. And she actually had to drink a cup of tea in Africa.
OK. Yes. Yeah, so actually, no, I can describe an experience on a train from Beijing to Guilin in China in 1985. We were given a cup of green tea. That was absolutely disgusting. It was by these Chinese people, and it was obviously the height of hospitality for them. And, it was bad.
But you drank it?
A little bit, I think, yes, and gave the rest to Chris.
Yeah. Is anyone watching? Quick swap of
absolutely,
cups.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what do you drink instead?
Well, actually, when I say I don't drink regular tea, I do drink some of the alternative ones now. So actually, I do drink, my second drink of the day is usually green ginger tea, because I think it's good for me. And I do like things like peppermint tea and lemon and ginger, things like that. So I do drink some of the alternative teas.
Green ginger tea probably counts. Does it have tea in it?
Well, I've no idea. It's just a tea bag, Twinings, quite nice.
Interesting. So how do you respond to the big question, the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
Okay, so I actually don't think it's dying or sleeping. I think Christianity is alive and well. I think Jesus is alive and well, and I see it in my own life and I see it in the lives of people around me. So I don't think Christianity's dying or sleeping. I think the church might be in places in danger of dying, possibly sleeping. You know, sometimes it needs to die, something falls to the ground and something new can be brought to life. Sometimes the church needs to be woken up, I think. But I don't think Christianity is either dying or sleeping, because I think Jesus is alive and well.
So it's not my statement originally, it was this person called Tim Stanley who'd written this article in The Telegraph. And a couple of years ago, and I was really, I don't know what I think about that. And it kind of didn't go away. So that's why I chose it as the focus. So we have a bigger ministry in the weekdays than we do on a Sunday. Is that true for you here, numbers-wise, as well, or is it?
Definitely. I mean, obviously, Sunday ministry is important, and that's the gathered people of God. But I think here at St Michael's, there's all sorts of things going on right through the week. So, I mean, for example, one of my big responsibilities is that I'm chair of a committee that runs a preschool and nursery in the old vicarage, which the diocese has kindly rented to us for 10 years now. And we have 100 children passing through our doors in a week, 20, 25 staff that we work with, that we get to connect with. We have a coffee shop that has a footfall, I think, of about I've forgotten the numbers. A lot of people anyway, thousands through the course of a year. Active children, youth ministry, messy church that meets monthly, about 140 people. So, yeah, you know, midweek ministry is very active.
Do you have regular worship services during the week as well?
Yes, we have a midweek communion a couple of times a month. We have morning prayer a couple of times a week. We worship as part of our kind of pattern of meetings. So our staff meeting on a Wednesday always begins with prayer and worship. I lead a team that goes into the residential care home just next door to the church centre. We do services there a couple of times a month.
So it is, yes.
Church is active in the community in organised, structured ways and in much more kind of natural, organic ways.
Yeah, I mean, we are worship figures because the way that our children's worship works and has generally moved away from a Sunday, although we have one big group that meets on a Sunday, but we have two others now which we meet either on a Friday or a Wednesday. So our worship figures are much higher during the week than they are certainly on Sunday mornings, but on
Sundays. I don't think ours aren't higher, but they're certainly there as part of the mix. So
Now I'm going to go on to your three specialist questions. The first one of which is, if you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
Oh gosh, yes. Well, I mean, I think one of the really good things about the Church of England is that it is such a broad thing. And I think, you know, considering that, there's a lot of unity in our diversity, but I would love to see more, particularly around the sort of contentious issues surrounding human sexuality. You know, I really don't like the ugliness that can come out in the debate. And I understand it's because, you know, people feel strongly on both wings, but I would love to see us find the grace to hold that unity and diversity in some of these more complex, painful areas.
Yeah.
I hope it will come. You know, I think it's come in other areas, it just takes time.
Elizabeth felt that 10 or 15 years ago, the Church of England was better at listening to people in different parts of that kind of constitution of the Church of England. But she felt that was less so now than it had been maybe when we were training. I wasn't sure what I felt about that, possibly because I don't see that in day-to-day ministry. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the beauties for me of doing my training at WEMTEC was that it did expose me to the breadth of the Church of England in a way that actually changed my perceptions. So I think it was something that was very rich for me. And I think because of that, I've probably personally had more willingness to listen and be open to the breadth of views. You know, whether that is something that's characterised at the sort of more extreme wings, I don't know. Maybe not. But I believe in it.
We did some really good exercises actually on WEMTEC about which kind of faced some of the elephants in the room. And I can still remember doing some of those. And I think there's still some of the key issues that we discussed. I mean, we did an exercise, I can't remember if you were there for it on a weekend, about how what we believe about heaven and hell is actually tied up with our churchmanship, and we probably haven't even thought about that. And that was a really helpful exercise, actually. I can't remember, I think Keith maybe ran that, but it was
definitely. It just, you know, just that opening of your mind to see that there can be more than one way of looking at different things, and you know, it's not one that's necessarily right and the other wrong. It's there's a breadth that actually is very rich.
So the second specialist question is, what's the best thing for you about being ordained?
Well, it's just kind of anniversary of ordinations weekend. So 15 years for me tomorrow since I was ordained. So yeah, I always think about it again at this time of year, and I think I had no idea when I was ordained how rich an experience it was going to be. I feel like I'm doing what I was born to do, actually, and I can't believe what I've found myself doing and how much I've enjoyed it. But I think probably the very best thing is just the opportunity, being allowed into people's lives, really, I think, you know, given a chance to make a difference. Very rich.
Yeah, I try to explain it to people, but it's almost impossible to explain to people, I find.
Yeah. Yeah, you're invited. It's a bit like, you know, Moses and his burning bush experience. You find yourself standing on holy ground without even realising it. And yeah, time and time again. So
I think one of the things for me in my curacies, well, certainly in my second curacy, I did a lot of funeral, sort of funerals. I would do two a week when I was there, if apart from holidays or kind of when I came back from holidays. But I would go up to people's houses and ring their doorbells, and they would let me in, and they had never met me before, and yet they would share these things with me. And I felt it was a really good kind of example of us being representative.
Yeah, definitely.
In that way.
Yeah. We've just had a Trinity Ordinand student on placement, and she'd come with me into the residential care home. And the first time we went, somebody who's been part of the congregation there for 5 years was missing. And I looked in and realised she wasn't well, and went in and we prayed with her. And it turned out that 2 days later she died. And, you know, every time I take students in with me, they're always really, you know, that's often one of the things that they say is a highlight, just that opportunity to, you know, be with somebody at such a kind of crucial point when they're, you know, about to go home to be with the Lord, and just to commit them on their way. So, yeah.
I had the strangest experience in Wellington once, where, because we had 10 nursing homes in our parish, which is quite a lot.
Quite a lot, yeah.
And someone phoned from one of the nursing homes we didn't have very much to do with and said, we need a vicar to go and see my mum because she's dying, but you're not to tell her that she's dying because she doesn't know. And I went to this nursing home and they opened the door and let me in. I didn't sign in. I was wearing my dog collar. They said, that's fine. And I went in to see this woman who was barely conscious at this point, and no relatives were there or anything. They literally just shoved me in a room with her. And yet there's that responsibility. Actually, you know that people can hear. What do you do? How do you pray with someone in that state? How, you're not going to ever form a relationship with them.
No, it's just being present in the moment, isn't it? And as you say, trying to do your best to represent God. Yeah.
It was, that was quite a challenging moment, I have to say. The next question I was inspired by Richard Clutterbuck, who was our principal. So what's the best thing about the Archers?
The Archers, oh, well, I thought long and hard about this.
Sorry, no. This is probably a really difficult question, actually.
It isn't. The best thing is that they do allow people to have happy marriages. So I'm from the north of England. My parents were from the north and brought up on Coronation Street. Mm-hmm. And I stopped watching it many years ago because I just got frustrated that they never, ever let anybody have a happy marriage. But what I really like about the Archers is that they do. So not that every marriage or any marriage is perfect and problem-free, but they allow people to work through the issues and, yeah, actually model that there is a way back from you know, adultery, from betrayal, and it's about communication and forgiveness and reconciliation and the very long, slow process of rebuilding trust. And I really love the fact that the Archers shows that.
That's really good. I have listened to some more of the Archers on sabbatical than I would normally do. And I looked back at some of the... Sometimes I have to go back and look on the website because I've lost track of something. And then they have these things in some of the where it says, and this was an issue and this happened, but they worked it out. So,
And there's one open storyline at the moment where I don't know how it's going to resolve. It's the most bizarre marriage that's breaking up and you don't really understand why. But I am hoping that they might find a way back. But we'll see. It's life, isn't it? And it happens. So.
Yeah. So the last question is, what's your favourite thing that begins with T?
Oh, yes. Do you know, I really had to think about this. And I think I'm going to say time. Mm-hmm. I think the gift of time, the time that we have, you know, here on earth to make a difference, to make our lives count. You know, the time that we spend with people, particularly one-on-one. I love doing one-on-one type work, and I think that that's a real gift that we can give and receive. So I think my answer is time.
There have been some other answers of time as well. So that's really interesting. So that's all our questions. Thank you very much,
Excellent.
Julie.
You're very welcome.